The Hayes Advantage with Kathleen Hayes and Vonnie Quinn. On demand via our Bloomberg Radio Plus app. Free for iPhone and Android devices.
More driving the markets, and of course that is central banks around the world. It's not just the Fed, the ECB, the European Central Bank, the Bank of England, and of course Bank of Japan, the Australian National, et cetera. They just go on and on. Let's bring in now Ben Emmons, Portfolio Manager at Pacific Investment Management Co. That is, of course, PIMCO, to talk to us about these important moves and what they mean for the markets. Good morning, Ben.
Good morning, Kathleen. Good morning, Fonnie. It's good to be back on your show. Thank you.
Good morning, Ben. Thank you.
So the Federal Reserve, let's start there. Close to home. Got a statement yesterday. The Fed put a little more in emphasis on inflation and apparently a move maybe to not placate, but give a nod to Jim Bullard, the president of the St. Louis Fed, who said the Fed needs to watch this more closely in its decision to taper. But when you step back, what did we learn from the Fed yesterday? What does it mean moving ahead?
Yeah, I think that's right, that they certainly took Jim Bullard's concern into account. It was also very explicitly mentioned in the minutes the last time. So the Fed this yesterday did was just simply enhancing again the guidance related to inflation, how they view what is acceptable or not. And I think if you look then forward, if they make any certain more changes to their forward guidance, it will be really announced at a press conference, because that's what the June minutes highlighted too. That's what the chairman was given as an assignment, to announce changes to the purchase program or forward guidance. I think what you have to look for is that everything indeed is moved towards the September meeting, where perhaps tapering will be announced. And that's what I think people have to look forward to, that this statement from yesterday was much more about, okay, here's where we assess the economy. We take note of that inflation is low, and if it stays so low, it could pose a risk to address that concern. But that the real potential changes of the announcement of the tapering of the program will happen likely in September.
So we have a couple of more inflation indicators before that September meeting. What if inflation stays as low as it is, the core PCE, at 0.8? Now, if those CPI reports and PCE reports before September 19th don't show any improvement, if you like, does that put tapering in jeopardy?
Well, the market certainly will look at that, because if it indeed would stay that low or fall even lower, then you would expect the market will respond to that by suggesting that, yeah, maybe the Fed cannot do it this quickly just yet, because although the unemployment rate may see improvement and payrolls tomorrow may show even further improvement, not necessarily that it has to be in balance with the two, right? It's a dual mandate. So, yeah, the market may take note of that. I have to say, though, that it sounds from all the commentary that we have seen that the Fed is very much on this track to taper this program at some point. And maybe what is played too here is that the cost, the risks of asset purchases are playing really in their mind as well. If you take note of Governor Steen's speech earlier this year, singling out the froth in the high yield market, for example. So, and as Fisher and Plusher came on and started to voice concerns about risks in markets as you purchase more securities, that the cost-benefit analysis also plays a role here.
Sure, and it's Esther George's main reason as well for dissenting, and she continues to dissent. Still, though, can the Fed do anything in September if we don't see any kind of pickup in inflation? I mean, what would tapering do to inflation if we did get, say, $20 billion less of purchases?
Not sure if it would do anything directly to inflation itself. I think that if the tapering is announced, that given what the market, how it has already moved very, very decisively ahead, that in that sense also inflation expectations, as they are now played out, inflation break-evens have fallen a bit, that maybe that has already discounted the first part of the tapering. What you then have to look forward to in the future is like, but what does the second part of tapering really mean? Or is it going to be just simply a reduction of the program on a monthly basis by XYZ amount?
So what does this mean for currencies? We've got the euro back at 132 against the dollar.
Yeah, the dollar is key here in a way that the dollar strength that we've witnessed over the last few months is a combination of higher rates and higher real rates, and perhaps also some expectation of better growth going forward. And the dollar, if tapering were to happen and it's based upon further improvement of data, then the dollar, you know, naturally would strengthen against major currencies.
Okay.
We also had some central bank moves today, or non-moves, really. The European Central Bank not doing anything, the Bank of England not doing anything, and keeping its stimulus in place. Were, you know, you surprised that there was nothing tweaked at all, Ben?
Yeah, I think that was somewhat expected. But the Bank of England, though, that short statement they released, they indicated there that next week at the inflation report press conference, they would explain what forward guidance framework may mean in their minds, because the chancellor has requested that from the Bank of England. And in the case of the ECB, well, Draghi did do a lot of effort today in the press conference to explain how they view forward guidance. So those were the notable points, but that they left rates unchanged and not take any policy action, that was sort of as expected.
Do we read from this, though, that they're taking a leaf out of the Federal Reserve's book, that forward guidance seems to be working in some way?
That may so be so. It also has maybe to do with trying to distance themselves from what's happening here in the United States. I think it's notable that as we had higher rates in May and June, that then subsequently the ECB came out with their comments about forward guidance. It looks to me like they're trying to distance themselves from, well, the Fed is maybe going to taper, but it doesn't mean that in our case we're going to start hiking interest rates too, or, and so forth, right? So they try to keep it separate from what the Fed policy does, because as we talked about back in May, the correlation between interest rates is high, and so as US rates go up, other rates go up elsewhere, and I think that may have caused us some concerns among the ECB and Bank of England members, that they would ensure that their rates are not necessarily going to go up for the reasons that are only for US based.
So you manage money, you're a bond guy. How successful can the central banks be in managing what the bond markets do with their words and their forward guidance? Does the bond market say, well, that's fine, but, you know, if U.S. bond yields are moving, we're going to move too?
Yeah, that's a clear challenge. I think that you can have this forward guidance and you can enhance it and explain it better and add more elements to it. But the end of the day is that as capital flows go and as positions are being put in the market, the forward guidance may help for a period of time, but long-term interest rates may move altogether. And that's also why, you know, long bonds is not really the sector you want to be in this sort of environment. That's also, you can also see that today in the price action. That's
sell-off in the 30-year's down 1.5. The yield's
right
at 3.73. We've got the 10-year down nearly 1 point. The yield's back up to 2.68.
Yeah, exactly. So it's expressing, one expresses there that interest rates in U.S. are seeing a better growth ahead, I guess. But if it influences also other long-term interest rates elsewhere because of correlation that is driven by capital flows and so forth, then that's not really the sector you want to be in. So the forward guidance may help the front end of the yield curve, and that's also a more favorable position to be in, but not necessarily the long end of the yield curve.
What about inflation then? I mean, the August inflation report, will it show that the bank sees more inflation to come?
I think what the inflation report may demonstrate is that the target of 2% that the Bank of England has, they have been over that target for quite some time. Inflation has come off somewhat, by the way, but that they're still dealing with having above target inflation. At the same time, they're dealing with an economy that's growing but not strong enough. And therefore, you know, they need to maintain accommodative policy. And I think the big highlight again would be, as that little statement today showed from the Bank of England, is what would be their framework of forward guidance exactly be, given that Mark Carney is now the Bank of England governor. And he's someone who has actually pioneered this idea of forward guidance at the Bank of Canada. So I think people will really look at that. What does that exactly mean? Because the UK Chancellor has requested that from the Bank of England to explain, you know, what this forward guidance could mean for the Bank of England.
Emerging markets, they've been hit. That the G20 policy statement called on the Fed and others to, you know, move carefully in order to not unsettle them too much. As someone who's managing bond money around the world, what does this mean to you? Where is there a safe harbor for bonds? Is there a sweet spot?
Well, as I mentioned, I guess the quote-unquote sweet spot would be still more the shorter end to intermediate part of the yield curve because of
in
this.
Every country? In a certain part of the world? Is it just across the board, getting the short in, ride this out, and then see when you can start buying some longer dated paper?
No, I wouldn't phrase it that way because that would generalize it too much. The G20 tried to do that by saying forward guidance is helpful. Please implement it everywhere. I guess it stems volatility, but that's you can't really take that as a sort of a guide to, okay, we're going to implement that everywhere, meaning in terms of bond portfolio. Now, where they mean it really, so in the Eurozone, in the UK, and in the US, there, the front end of the yield curve is probably more relatively a better position to be in than in long bonds. Emerging markets is a different story. It has also a lot to do with growth, that is how it is developing there. As you know, as China is slowing down, for example, this has an influence on emerging markets and the dollar story itself. The strengthening of the dollar that has had influence on rising rates in emerging markets. So that's more challenging, I would say, at this stage. So I would say forward guidance, the way the G20 phrased it, it likes to see it globally, but in the end of the day, I think it's more the developed markets that really will use it as their tool for monetary policy.
Ben Eamons, thank you so very much for joining us.
Thank you very much, Kathleen and Vonnie. Thanks for having me.
Indeed. And we'll be looking forward to your next book, Ben. I know it's on the way, right?
Correct. Yeah.
You're just a book writing fool lately, Ben.
Yeah, it keeps going.
Well, thanks so much. Thanks for taking time from a busy day to join us.
The Hayes Advantage, weekdays at 10 a.m. Eastern, in New York on Bloomberg 1130, in Boston on 1200 a.m. and 94.5 FM HD2, or on Sirius and XM Satellite Radio Channel 113. Copyright 2013 Bloomberg LP.